So, I want you...
First impressions aren't the most important thing. They're the only thing. At Ernie's Print Shop, we'll produce what you need to represent your company professionally. Right now, you can get 1,000 full-color business cards, 1,000 4x6 postcards, or a 3x5 banner for just $60. You choose. Check us out at erniesprintshop.com. Ernie's Print Shop. Over 50 years, one source, one solution. erniesprintshop.com. 502-969-8585.
Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springson of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email myviewmatters@aol.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.
So, I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, "I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!"
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome once again to the Ed Springston Show, brought to you by the MVM Radio Network, home of LouisvillePolitics.com and EdSpringston.com, where you can go for all the latest. And, man, I tell you what, we have a lot to talk about. We're probably not going to spend as much time on local stuff as we normally do, but we do have some interesting stories going on here locally. But, of course, we can't start talking about anything until we say hello to our good friend, Mr. Ed Martin. How are you, sir?
All right. All right, Mr. Springson, a little wore out, but none the worse for the wear.
I want to know what you did, man. You're actually dead on time tonight. You're usually within a minute or two, and I was shocked. I'm seeing you in the listening queue before I even hit the intro music. I was like, whoa.
Hey, it just happened, you know. Sometimes I'll be honest with you, and I don't want to hurt your feelings, but you know, sometimes when 7 o'clock rolls around, I've got some good AC/DC or Zeppelin or Kid Rock or something is going at the time, and I'm gonna finish that song. And I'm sorry if that hurts your feelings, but you just don't pay me enough to turn off good. You don't pay me enough to turn off a good song.
Well, believe me, I don't pay me enough to tell you to turn it off. But it's not my feelings that are hurt, though, man. You got to understand. I appreciate good rock and roll like everybody does, but it's the listening audience that we talk to that is upset right now. That is upset.
Well,
and
it shouldn't be upset. I'm on time today, but you know, I would also like to think that our listening audience, you know, they can respect some good tunes too. So they're sitting back going, I wouldn't jump either.
Well, there you go. I hear you. And our good friend Cy in the chat room is already talking about tonight. It was New Kids on the Block. Man, I tell you what, that's like the back end boys, ain't it? You know, but I tell you, we do have
New Kids on the Block. I've only heard a few good things about their concerts.
Well, I call them old guys on the street now, the back street boys or the back end boys. You know, there's all kinds of that boy band crap was never anything that actually I cared about. And I'm like you. I'm into the old rock, man, the AC/DC for hard rock. And I do get into the 80s music, though. I got to admit that freely. I do get into some of the 80s stuff, like your Styx and things like that. So that's pretty cool. You know, we do have a lot going on. But I tell you, one of the most interesting stories for me today came out of the Courier-Journal, believe it or not. The Courier-Journal is reporting a story that the city has made a deal with a developer, Underhill Associates. They have made a deal, a recent agreement, to redevelop Colonial Gardens. Now, you know as well as I know, Colonial Gardens is a sore spot anywhere. The damn thing should be leveled. But the city decided it had to be preserved, historic, for whatever reason. I think Elvis spit out the window on Newcut one day driving by or something. But what's interesting is the city bought the property last year for $430,000. And they made this deal with Underhill. They're going to give them a $1.2 million construction grant. and Underhill, of course, has committed to, you know, spending somewhere around $2 million. So this is interesting to me because as we continue pointing out in this city, you know, this was a deal that we thought was made last year. This was a deal that we knew was going on. This was an insider deal. The city was going to buy up Colonial Gardens and make a gem of an offer to one of their privileged associates of the Democratic Mafia, and Jim King in particular, Underhill Associates. Underhills have been named in countless documents where we can show the relationship and how these guys benefit each other. Once again, it looks like political patronage to me that we spend $430,000 for a property, give it away, and give $1.2 million to this company who's entrenched with Jim King, Greg Fisher, and the like. That's what the story is. I find it insulting to we, the voters, that we have to witness this once again. You know, what do you think about all of that?
Well, I think, you know, when it comes to, I would say this, you know, even though I have a libertarian streak, some businesses are what you would call essential, you know, and I can see the government chipping in to help them, whether, you know, and that usually revolves around health care or something like that. But this is an entertainment get-up. It's not, to me, it's not at all unlike 4th Street Live. It's like, look, if you've got, you know, if there's a need there and the community's behind it and this thing stands to, you know, have some value in that it patronize it, then the government shouldn't have to step up and subsidize it indirectly. Indirectly. If it's a winner, then it's a winner. If it's not, then level the damn thing. I mean, I know, you know, my dad, when he was alive, people would talk about Colonial Gardens. It was a party spot. Well, you know, so was the Troubadour, and so was the Heartwood Tavern, and some other places like that. Mm-hmm. And they had no trouble scraping them off the map. So, you know,
well, that's it.
It amazes me. I mean, and I guess it can be made to, it's unique. I'll give the building that much. But I look at it and I think, yeah, I would never, you know, I don't think anybody in their right mind would ever build something that looks like that. It's not that great.
Well, it's not that great. It's not in a well-established area. I mean, it's not anything that's going to create any revenue. This is nothing more than, you know, giving a grant of our tax money to a political insider friend of Jim King and cronies once again. I mean, you know, and they've got two businesses in there now that have stayed there. They've got a Little Caesars Pizza, and they've also got a tire store that operates right out of the Colonial Gardens property. And they're being told that they're going to be relocated. So, you know, these guys, I mean, according to manager.
Thank you for your patronage and not letting this deteriorate into a crack house.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's it. You know, and the thing is, the manager of the Little Caesars store, Richard Fields, you know, he told the Courier-Journal on Friday, you know, we like it here. Business is good. You know, and the same applies to the tire store, I'm sure. So you've got two reliable tenants who have continued to stay there when nobody else wanted anything to do with it, who are paying rent and lease, and you're saying, nah, city bought it for $430,000. We took the rent payments for the last year. We're going to give this away to some political crony friends of ours, and we're going to go ahead and boot you out too. This thing stinks to high heaven. I just thought it was really interesting, a story to bring up just because of that relationship. This is something that,
yeah.
you know, once again,
well,
we're getting into.
Me, I'm always a fan of this, of small business, and 99.999% of small businesses, they don't get any government assistance. You either fly or die.
Sure.
But this is where it's aggravating to me, is apparently when you reach a certain level, the government's going to guarantee it. It's like, no, look, if it's viable, it's viable. Somebody will put money up for it. That's what it comes down to. If it's basically when you start giving away, you sell it for a song, you give it, you know, you start throwing grant money at it or low interest loans, that's, to me, that just automatically says, under no other circumstances, is this viable? So, you know, but somebody says, we want to see this thing take off. We want to be here for the ribbon cutting. Everybody tell us how great you are. So we are going to spend your money to force it to be viable.
Well, and that's exactly it. You know, Gray Fisher said the deal was going to be a good deal because it saves a piece of Louisville history, and it's going to bring new stores and restaurants to South Louisville. That's a crock, folks. That's a crock. That's a load of bull. You know, when a city is giving up $2.03 million, and that's exactly what it is, with a $430,000 purchase price and a $1.6 million grant to rehab this property, here we're putting, you know, we're putting millions of dollars into a property that should be raised, and it would make more money as a parking lot. Seriously, that's the truth. So this is very concerning to me. Once again, it's political patronage, and this is how the Democratic Mafia gets to keep our money, because they use our money against us to do stupid stuff, and then they go out and act like they're reinvesting in a part of Louisville. Take that $2 million and take it to the West End and reinvest it there. That's where they need the money at. This is ridiculous.
Yeah.
And, you know,
go ahead. Sooner or later, let's get Memorial Gardens back up or something like that, you know. But
I agree.
Yeah, I mean, I look at it, and sometimes it's just, you know, they, of course, the political machinery and the PR machinery, they plan on people forgetting. But we'll have this discussion today, and we'll probably have a few more things to say about it as time goes on. They'll float it. They'll give it tax breaks or whatever. They'll keep it viable for half a dozen years. Then when everybody forgets about all the money we sank into it, somebody's going to look at it and say, this thing is not making money. Close it down. Then it'll deteriorate again. And probably our children will have the same discussion when they go, well, they're trying to save Colonial Gardens again.
Oh, sure. Sure. And it's just the point of being ridiculous. And I'm going to stay with the Courier-Journal for a minute because there's a couple other stories here I really want to point out. It was really interesting. The Courier-Journal puts a story out today, put it out Saturday, where they had all these leaders getting together to discuss race in the wake of downtown violence. But this is how they started their story. 29 people were arrested, 23 were injured, and almost 40 fires were reported overnight in Lexington after the University of Kentucky lost the men's championship basketball game. But barely a word was raised about mob violence afterward. This is according to Terry Singer, the dean of the Kent School of Social Work at the University of Louisville. He argues that that's due at least in part because photos showed mostly white people on the UK scene, and he was offended because nobody said we have a white problem at UK. Now, this is the thing for me. I saw that. It stood out like a sore thumb. Then, of course, they went on for a whole article trying to say that, you know, we have this misconception of blacks and riots and things like that that we ran into March 22nd. You know, this is exactly what we talk about when we talk about the liberal press and the liberal idiots who are deans in some sort of a school, you know, trying to tell us how to live. Yes, there were 29 people were arrested, 23 were injured, and yes, there were 40 fires the night that the UK lost the NCAA men's basketball championship. No one is denying that. Were they primarily white? Yes, they were. But does this mean that this is a consistent problem? No, it doesn't. This was a major event.
Well,
you know, go ahead.
I was going to say, this just shows that the guy has reached a new level of idiocy. I mean, he's tried this as a false equivalence. Yeah, 29 people were injured. I'm curious how they were injured. Something tells me that some drunk fool fell down and busted his head. Nobody, the question is, yes, 29 people were injured. Were they injured by someone else, or were they just really, like, clumsy? There were arrests. Oh, were they because someone was violating someone else's rights or abusing them or harming them in any way? Or was it just because they were maybe the same guy falling down drunk?
Right. Was there 200 people?
Because you've created a public nuisance by being publicly intoxicated and busting your head on the and tripping and falling and busting your head on the pavement. Hey, guess what? That one person just counted for 4 statistical points when this comes to this professor. I mean, geez, this guy's, he's reaching so hard that it's almost racist the way he's reaching.
Well, see, that's the thing, and that's exactly it. That's exactly where I was heading was. Because this guy, to me, is the real racist. Because all this guy is doing, and the Courier-Journal is helping aid in that effort, aiding and abetting, because the Courier-Journal is racist as well, in my opinion, or they couldn't continue spewing the liberal crap that they do. But here's the deal. When he goes out here trying to compare a national championship game, a one-time event, with injuries that were reported, probably most of which were alcohol-related injuries to some form or another, either it was the drunk falling down, or the drunk got stupid or did something crazy, like lighting couches on fire, we know about. Okay, I mean, all these little things.
Photographic evidence of drunks climbing trees and then drunks falling out of trees.
Well, exactly. That's the whole point. This is not a group. This is not a group of white people that tell the whole world that they're part of a gang who rip off gun trains and go out and hurt people intentionally and beat up people in mass fights. I mean, that's the way it is. And what this is doing to me, this is the most incredible thing, is that this idiot, as far as I'm concerned, and people hate it when I use names, but I can't help it, this idiot, Kent Singer, is sitting out here discounting the problems that the black community is facing right now because of the black teen gangs and violence. He's trying to make a comparison from an NCAA championship one-time event to an every weekend event with a bunch of black teen violent teenagers. I mean, that's just the way it is. So to me, that is insulting, because that makes the black community feel like they don't have a problem. It makes the rest of the community ignore the black problem even further. So the problems in the West End, trying to give these kids something positive to look forward to, you know, by investment and everything else, you just discount it to the point of non-existence. That's a disservice to the African-American and black community, period.
Yeah, and it's an insult, too, because basically we're taking a snapshot of, you know, in this case, a couple days on either side, whether it's on State Street in Lexington for a couple days or whether it's downtown Louisville for a couple days. We're saying, hey, see, look, they both do it, so there must not either. If there's not a real problem in Lexington, there's not a real problem in Louisville, which of course completely discounts the other 363 days a year when there is a problem in Louisville.
Right, and that's exactly it.
It basically says to the people in Louisville who are victimized, who may sleep in their bathtubs or don't sleep well at all because they're afraid, you know, they're going to hear gunshots and they need to hit the floor. It's telling the victims that you don't have a problem. Come on, look, there's a bunch of drunk kids. They get together in a mob in Kentucky, in Lexington, a couple times a year. You don't have a problem. Go about your lives. Don't, you know, no need to invest any time, money, resources, or attention here. Move along. This happens everywhere, all the time even.
Exactly. We're taking the focus off of what we need to do to correct the problem. You know, and he even goes on, you know, according to this article, he goes on. And the article says that while the nature of the events differed, both resulted in injuries, arrests, and property damage. And then Singer just couldn't keep his mouth shut, and he goes on, well, we tend to color certain things in race. I love the terminology. Because we make some stereotypical leap that only African Americans would behave that way. Well, listen to me real carefully, Mr. Singer. other than the fact I think you're an idiot, let's make a logical argument here. Let's make a logical argument. Nobody assumes in any way, shape, or form that only African Americans would behave in the same situation that these white, primarily students at U of K behaved. Nobody ever assumed that at all. Here in Louisville, we have a race problem because we have unchecked black teen gangs going out in groups of 200, beating up individuals as a unit. You're not talking about a one-on-one fight. You're talking about 10 or 20 people picking on one person and beating the hell out of them and putting them in a hospital because they have nothing else to do. That is your problem. That's not stereotypical. That's fact. And that's also not racist. So, you know, we look at this, yeah. Ed, and I tell you, I get upset about it because it brings me to this
I get upset, but then again, I see it as, it's so sad, it's funny. I was going to make the joke, hey, don't ever let this guy in Cherokee Park on a given early fall Saturday because he's going to see white people and black people smashing into each other and stepping on each other and all sorts of other things, and he's liable to, you know, he's liable to have a, call it a riot, you know. I would call it a good Saturday for rugby, but you may call it a riot.
I hear you. But the reason this is so important is because there was an opinion piece that was actually printed in the Courier Journal today as well, talking about some of this. And it was a piece written by Kevin Fields. Kevin Fields is the senior vice president, the chief operating officer for the Louisville Central Community Centers, Inc. They have a website. You can go to LCCC, that's LCCC news.org, and read more about what they're about. But it's fascinating because in his opinion piece, he points out the obvious. He says, while there is great cause to be concerned about recent incidents in which crimes were committed by some youth, talking about downtown Louisville and the violence there, he says that he believes there is as much, if not greater, cause to be focused and actively engaged in addressing some of the larger systemic, social, and economic issues that all of our youth and families are faced with. And here are some interesting facts that came from this opinion piece by Mr. Fields, and that's why that just reinforced my belief about Singer. But it says, consider these facts for African-American youth within Jefferson County. Over 90% of African-American youth in Jefferson County live near or below the poverty level. The unemployment rate for African-American youth in Jefferson County is 2 to 3 times higher than for whites. Over 70% of the African-American youth in Jefferson County were assessed to be below proficiency in reading, and over 80% were below in math. Now, when we look at this and put it all in perspective, when it comes to the greater Louisville area, where is the greatest concentration of African Americans at, Ed?
No, it's in West Louisville.
Right. So when you're in West Louisville, yep. I mean, this just reinforces everything that we've been saying all along. Of course, you are far higher to be below proficiency in reading and math. You don't get an education. The unemployment rate, of course, is 2 to 3 times higher for the black youth than there are whites because there's no jobs. And all of that adds to the poverty level and everything else. What does this tell us?
Well, I mean, it tells us we need a cohesive effort to get in there and address the systemic problems, not just go in and do some silly, you know, I don't want to call it silly, but community centers that aren't open when the bad things happen. You know, we need to get down there. We need to come up with a comprehensive job and education. It works, you know, and that's the secret to other parts of town, good schools, and you know, a really respectable amount of jobs. That's what you need, and they need to be local. I mean, it's just simply, you know, saying that there are jobs in Louisville and then saying to one group of people, but it's an hour and a half bus ride each way, and you're on the bus's schedule, not your job schedule, by the way. You know, that doesn't cut it. We need to get We need to get busy with it. We need to get,
buses are so safe,
the thing
right?
That kills me is this is not a Democrat problem. You know, although they kind of own that part of town, I wish the hell the Republicans on our city council would would get engaged, and it's like, look, they at some point need to say, you know, okay, look, maybe I'm from the West End or the South End or the Javi area or whatever, and say, no, this is one city. And just obviously the Democrats aren't servicing these parts, so let's take the lead on that. I mean, I wish they would do that, but it's just, it doesn't seem like it's in the offing.
Well, we'll talk about what defines a Republican in Louisville here shortly, because I'm very disturbed by some other news coming out of Louisville today from our good friends at WFPL. But what this clearly shows, and I agree with Mr. Fields, what this clearly shows is these indicators show us that we have a hell of a lot to be concerned about as far as, you know, our community's black youth and the social and economic health. When you look at this, what do our leaders do, both inside and outside of West Louisville? All they do is sit there and they set up these special investigations. They set up these so-called community mobilization efforts in an effort to try to stem youth violence. All right, the focus is to stop the youth violence. The focus is not on doing the things that are necessary that creates this violence in the first place. We're not going to the root cause. We're treating the symptom. It's like putting a Band-Aid on a mortal wound, as we've often used this as an example. And that's exactly what we've been doing to the African-American youth in Louisville and the West End and everything else. So, you know, I like what Mr. Fields had to say. I think that his opinion piece was dead on. And I think that hopefully a lot of people saw that and realized what a quack this dean at the Kent School of whatever at the University of Louisville, just another person who doesn't need a job. They've probably never done a real job in their damn life. It just goes to show the idiocy of the statements that they've made. I mean, it really does, because you can't have it both ways. So for Singer to sit out here and scream that there's no race problem because a bunch of drunk white guys after a national championship game, you know, got stupid, you know, this is a one-time event, and try to compare that to something that's a weekend and an ongoing occurrence in Louisville, Kevin Fields just nailed it right on the head. And I urge you guys to check out his opinion piece,
and I'm sure
he's got it on the website.
If somebody is a little squeamish about calling it a white or a black problem, fine. Then let's call it a socioeconomic problem that disproportionately affects the black community in the West End.
There you go. Why not? Why not?
I mean,
let's just change the language.
Damn dean of a social work school. You think he could come up with something like that if he's going to write an op-ed, huh?
Right. I agree with you. It looks like our chat for some reason has just went down. I have no clue why, folks. It looks like it just popped some people out. Hopefully they're back in. I don't know. Seems to be a problem every now and then with BTR. But I do want to move on to some news stories. And by the way, for you guys who want to join the chat, it looks like it's coming back up now. For those who want to join the chat, you can always sign in using Facebook, Twitter, or things like that and talk to us. I tell you what we're going to do. We're going to take the bottom of the hour break. When we come back, we're going to get into some more disturbing news out of Louisville and beyond. I think you guys, you mentioned Republicans a minute ago, Ed. I think you're really going to love this. And for you guys that want to call in, the numbers as always, 858-683-1326, or you can call area code 502-805-0334. For you guys in the listening queue, don't forget to press that number 1 on your dial pad as always. And with that said, we'll be right back. You're listening to the Ed Springsteen Show right here on the MVM Radio Network. Stay tuned.
First impressions aren't the most important thing. They're the only thing. At Ernie's Print Shop, we'll produce what you need to represent your company professionally. Right now, you can get 1,000 full-color business cards, 1,000 4x6 postcards, or a 3x5 banner for just $60. You choose. Check us out at erniesprintshop.com. Ernie's Print Shop. Over 50 years, one source, one solution. erniesprintshop.com. 502-969-8585.
Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springsteen of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email MyViewMatters at AOL.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.
back. Yes, we are. Man, I tell you, Ed, there's always something going on that just really ruffles our feathers. It really does. This next one is pretty disturbing to me. But this is a story that WFPL, our good friends over there, put out. And what's disturbing about it is the content. This was actually put out yesterday morning on WFPL's website at WFPL.org. But Louisville authorities Friday, they unveiled that new security camera system that we've been talking about for the last few weeks, the $237,000 system. So they unveiled this on Friday going into Thunder on Saturday, and they were able to monitor different parts of the city in real time and things like that. They could zoom in, they could pan, they could do whatever. So this was all by design, and the Louisville Metro Police are supposedly going to be able to respond to these problems basically when they start. However, here's what the situation has become, and we knew this was a matter of time. Louisville Metro Council members, some of them, want to go even further than these security cameras. Councilman David Yates wants to get drones. You heard me right. They want to get drones. David Yates believes that putting drones out there is a very quick and efficient way to increase public safety. And it's going to allow us to respond faster in real time, record it, monitor, et cetera, and supposedly deter crime and solve crime. I've got major issues with that. The cost of drones these days are basically a few hundred dollars. So I'm actually thinking about buying one and parking it right over the top of David Yates' house. So anybody can buy a drone these days for a few hundred bucks. So it is cheaper. I mean, when you put a helicopter in the sky, I think it costs somewhere around $500 an hour. For a police helicopter, and that's everything. But it's fascinating because David Yates brought this up to Louisville Metro Chief Steve Conrad, and Steve Conrad isn't very receptive to it. This is one of the reasons I like Metro Police Chief Steve Conrad. I don't agree with him on everything, but I do like the guy. And he talks about how drones can actually see things that aren't in the public eye. So if you fly over an open field, there's really not an issue. But if you have a privacy fence around your yard, and it wasn't something that a man on the street could look through it, or driving in an alley or something, then a drone working for law enforcement wouldn't have a right to go in and look at that without a warrant. So the question for me is exactly what Chief Conrad brings up. Where do our rights of privacy stop?
Yeah. Well, especially since a lot of drone technology has everything from listening technology to infrared and stuff. So at some point they start, precisely, where does it end? I mean, say somebody wants to lay out topless in their backyard and has, or on a rooftop, and has an expectation of privacy. No.
Yeah.
you want to, there are certain things you do that you have an expectation of privacy, and it's a constitutional expectation of privacy. And this drone, I guess they're operating under the premise of no blood, no foul. I guess they're going to fly around and just look at stuff. If they pick it up randomly without a warrant, I guess it's not admissible into court. But by the same token, it's like, what do you, to me, now I don't mind them employing drones. Now let's say if they get a warrant and they want to send a drone up. Okay.
Well, see,
I'm surprisingly okay with that. You don't launch a drone until you have a warrant. If they want to play that, I'm okay with it. Again, like you said, it's cheaper than a helicopter, and it's cheaper in some case, and it's safer than maybe tell a cop to go kick a door down or something, or hunt somebody up in a field or something like that. But drones don't fly without warrants.
Well, I tell you, I see helicopters in our neighborhood. It's starting to become a common practice late at night, because some idiot out here is creating, they're causing theft and all these other things. But, everybody has seen a helicopter with a nightlight on, searching or following a vehicle or something. You've seen it on TV or you've seen it in your neighborhoods. We expect that. That's part of it. That's part of an immediate concern. But when I look at this, just randomly flying drones anywhere, for one thing, I'm with you. There must be a warrant. But I don't even like that idea. I don't like that idea one bit, because as that drone is going from point A to point B, recording everything in between, he's going over my backyard, to get to my neighbor's backyard. And while they're reviewing these tapes, they see something in my backyard. Then all of a sudden, I'm a suspect of whatever they want to make up. I mean, that's the thing. I don't agree with any of this. Now, is there a possibility that the drones could have a feasible use? Chief Conrad actually made a good point. You know, there were drones in Fort Knox were used. Remember the train derailment back in 2012 when the train derailed out here in southwest Jefferson County? You know, they brought in drones for Fort Knox, and they were used, you know, in an emergency capacity, keeping an eye on everything so the public could be safe. You know, that was a good thing for me. That was an emergency situation that had to be monitored because of leakage and you know, immediate area, the entire area. That made sense to me. You know, that's something that I could go with. But the fact that David Gates and his ilk...
Something had blown up,
right.
And you aren't putting a person in harm's way.
Well, and I'm exactly with you. And, you know, Chief Conrad, of course, brings it up that, you know, you really don't know how to use these because it creates... He's not a fan of making an investment in these things until legal questions have been answered through the courts, and none have. But you talked about Republicans a minute ago. You talked about Republicans. This is what I was getting to earlier when I alluded to it. I am very shocked by who I consider to be a good friend and a Republican council member, Councilman Kelly Downert. He doesn't think that there is a distinction between drones and helicopters, and goes on record to say that we don't want to be the last darn people in the world to do this. We ought to be first. You know, he thinks it's very important. That is disturbing to me because Republicans are typically the ones who are supposed to believe in less government and privacy and all of those things. Kelly Downert, bar none, is one of the most prominent Republicans in Jefferson County. He has done a lot of great things on the council as far as I'm concerned. And like I said, I consider him a personal friend. You know, we actually ran against each other in 2006 in a mayor's race. And Kelly is a real good guy. So I am puzzled of somebody of that caliber in a Republican Party, and I haven't talked to Mr. Downert or Councilman Downert about this. I plan on it. But I'm really shocked and puzzled that he would agree that drones are okay, that there's no distinction between drones and a human in a helicopter. I think there's a lot of distinction. How about you?
Well, I think there's a lot of difference. I mean, by the same token, like I say, a human in a helicopter with the right technology, again, it can be a violation of your rights to privacy if they go misbehaving. But at least they're not secretive about it. They're not, you know, hundreds of feet in the air where you can't see or hear them. The thing that... you know, aside from the obvious rights issues and the, you know, the expectation of privacy, the thing that gets me is, and I'm sorry, Councilman Downer, but that is a stupid statement to make that you don't want to be the last person to use it.
If you take
a step back and you remember, you know, but a couple of years ago, these drones were big, they were clunky, they were expensive. People didn't know how to operate them. You know, they were clumsy, and now they're inexpensive and easier to operate. You know, the software comes out more and more where these things fly more accurately. Some really cool videos you can see at times. But and as Chief Conrad says, there are legal issues to work out. So when I hear Councilman Downert say something like that, I'm thinking, man, you're definitely playing the opium game here, other people's money. Because the longer we wait, we let somebody else sort through the legal aspects of it, which will be expensive. I can assure you of that. You know, the ACLU or somebody is going to come looking to tear you a new one. You know,
the ACLU is already involved.
Justify and completely validate everything you're doing. So,
and the ACLU,
you know,
is already involved.
Someone that sits back and says, hey, let's let the technology take a few more leaps forward so it gets better and cheaper. And let's let some other city have at it, and let the ACLU or whomever, the Heritage Foundation or somebody, go after them and make them, you know, let them spend the money to establish all the legal parameters of what can and can't be done with a drone. And then once we do it, we'll just ask them to fax us a copy, and we'll be okay.
Well, that's it. I'm not in favor of drones just having arbitrarily being able to do whatever they want them to do. I'm not in favor of that at all. This is a disturbing thing to me, is the fact that both sides are actually agreeing that we should have that, especially when you have it coming from prominent Republicans. Democrat David Yates we expect to be a loose cannon, but prominent Republicans doing that, that's very disturbing. And again, I think the world of Kelly Dannert. I think he's one of Louisville's best when it comes to politicians. And so it was kind of disturbing to hear him say that he thinks we ought to be first in this drone thing. And as far as the ACLU, the ACLU is on record stating that they want cities to adopt guidelines for how they would be used before one ever took flight as part of any police program. So if we're going to go down the drone road, I'm with you.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. Aside from the drones, it's a silly statement that we want to be first. And to that, I would look at as a business person and say, no, we don't. We want to let somebody else, we want to let the ACLU square off with some other city and let them run up couple $100,000 in legal costs, if not more, to determine the parameters for what a drone can and can't be used for, and then we'll just go online and print a copy, and we'll know, and it won't cost us anything but 2 cents per sheet of paper.
Well, I tell you, Yates did go on and qualify a little bit of this. He did mention that when it comes to public safety grounds, like large crowds such as Thunder over Louisville or the Kentucky Derby, he's the one that pointed out that it costs $500 an hour for a police helicopter or any helicopter to be used in that situation. Now, could I see, as much as I hate to say it, could I see using a drone when you've got 500,000 to 700,000 people in downtown Louisville at the same time for Thunder over Louisville just monitoring the crowd? If I have to give in to something, sure, I could do that. The Kentucky Derby, sure, a few hundred thousand people doing that. If I had to give in to something, those are full community events. They are well-publicized, well-known. Everybody knows that these are potentials. Yep. I can go with that. But to sit here and tell
me
that...
I would add further to what you're saying is it also happens to be publicly owned land, the airspace above it. If you're on the waterfront, that's not private property. If you're in a public park, that is not private property. Your assumption and your expectation of privacy is diminished when you venture out into a public park and do whatever.
Right.
So
sure.
Yes, I would say, and I happen to be right next door to a park. So you know what?
Sure.
If you want drones to fly, whatever, 200 feet above and monitor the trails of the park, you know what? Not my property, not my airspace. That's public airspace. That's essentially, funded in one way or the other by the government, maintained. If that's your airspace, fine. Knock yourself out. But
sure. And my property.
I just don't cross the creek.
Oh, I agree with you. And our good friend Paul over at Stop Invisible Taxes, he puts an excellent comment in the chat room. We have a reasonable expectation of privacy, and I agree with that. We do have a reasonable expectation of privacy, and when you allow drones to be used at will, you've just violated my reasonable expectation of privacy. Let's go to the phones. I think this is our good friend Mayo.
That it is.
Hello, Mayo. How are you, sir?
I'm doing good. Just what you're always touching on. I don't know what the last drone Ed saw was, but you should check out some of the newer ones. Like I've said, and I agree, our land, our property, instead of building a fence, why not have drones fly the border, between Mexico and between Canada? That would provide jobs or keep our military busy or something along that nature.
Sure.
At least show somebody's doing something. And, for the manpower and everything, like you were saying, to fly a two-person police helicopter, these things can basically, the newer ones, stay up longer. They have no human stress resistance, so it's mechanical stress, so they can fly faster, turn sharper, go further.
Well, that's the thing. So let's go ahead.
Be cheaper than building a wall.
Well, I agree with you. And if you're only talking about a few hundred dollars to purchase one, you can feasibly have one guy flying three drones at the same time, I would think, based on the technology I've seen. Mm-hmm. So you can have one guy doing multiple drones at the same time. Yeah, protect the borders. protect the borders. Right now, we don't care to protect the borders. We don't want to protect the borders. Our United States government does not care one iota about protecting the borders. But I think that would be a better use of those resources than spying on private Americans. And what really concerns me the most is that ultimately there's going to be a case that's going to come up that is going to end up at the Supreme Court challenging drone use on private land and private property. And what really scares me the most is that the Supreme Court, based on the ridiculous decisions I think they've been making over the last couple of years, including the conservative, so-called conservative part of the court, would actually agree with law enforcement and allow this to happen. I really do. And I think that's insulting. Now, we do know that right now, as of 2012, the FAA, they're the ones who basically authorized drones and everything else, had not, as of 2012, the FAA had not authorized drone flight requests in Kentucky. So this should not happen yet. But it is amazing that we've got Democrats and Republicans alike who are supposedly polar opposites when it comes to government. You know, again, it just proves to me that the Uniparty is alive and well, especially right here in Louisville. Am I wrong?
Well, not when you're absolutely right. When it comes to cool toys, I mean, they all want to be the first kid on the block with the cool toy. So I wish I could disagree with you, but I can't.
It's hard to disagree with me, man, I tell you. And we've got some other stories. I kind of want to move on to a couple of well, I guess it would be considered a state story, for right now. But it is interesting, too. Our good friends over at WFPL, and Mayo, I'm going to leave your mic open, my friend. Our good friends over at WFPL also reported Mitch McConnell. Mitch McConnell was apparently talking at a gun rally that he had received an endorsement from over the weekend, right before the weekend. This was reported on Friday there. But Mitch McConnell called it a cover-up when it came to the sexual harassment scandal that the state Democrats threw under the rug against former Democratic state rep John Arnold. The ethics panel and everything else threw this under the rug, said they weren't going to take any action against former state rep John Arnold, Democratic state rep John Arnold. And Mitch McConnell said that's a cover-up, that we should reconsider that ruling that cleared him of any wrongdoing. We have three staffers in the state capitol that accused John Arnold of sexually harassing them, and the House Democrats never did a full investigation and just immediately cleared him. Now, this is interesting, and the reason it's interesting is Alison Lundigan Grimes is on a campaign trail talking about how she is promoting women's rights and standing up for women and all these other things, but Alison Lundigan Grimes would not go on record saying that this guy should be removed, and would not go on record in any negative way against Democratic State Rep. John Arnold, former Democratic State Rep. John Arnold. You know, and McConnell actually has got a history of doing the right thing. I mean, if you look at it, when it comes to this situation, if you look at this, in 1994, McConnell was head of the Senate Ethics Committee when Republican Bob Packwood of Oregon was accused of sexual misconduct involving Senate staffers. Now, think about this. All right? Even though McConnell knew or felt that if Republican Bob Packwood of Oregon was stricken from office, that seat would probably go to a Democrat in the Senate, his committee still voted unanimously to expel Bob Packwood from office. You know, when you get into the impeachment of former President Bill Clinton in 1999, you know, the House impeached Bill Clinton. The Senate did not. You know, and there's a nice, interesting quote they bring from the Washington Post on this, where McConnell says that we Republicans were aware during the Packwood debate that we would likely lose that Senate seat if Packwood was removed from office. So we had a choice. We could retain the Senate seat for political reasons, or we could retain our honor. We chose honor, expelled him, and never looked back. So who's really looking after these female staffers that are being sexually harassed? Alison Lundigan Grimes or Mitch McConnell?
Well, I think when it comes to government staffers, I think it's obvious. If I hate to say it because I like you. I have Democrat friends, and to me, this is just it's one of those, it's just, you know, the shake my head or head desk moments. I mean,
right.
at what point, the guy's a former, you know, he's a former now. He had not one, but three women come out against him. And it's a public thing. It's like, go on and censor him or whatever, get him. But especially for Alison Lundergan Grimes, whose actual, you know, her stated ambition is to move from state politics to federal politics, that she can't take a stand on it as a woman. But it tells me that somehow, somewhere along the way, even when it comes to your slimy partners in, you know, your co-party people that are, you know,
right,
other Democrats, as slimy as they are, you can't bring yourself to condemn them on behalf of your entire gender.
Agreed. Now here's the rest of the...
Basically, what Alison Lundergan Grimes, I'm hearing is I'm a party hack before I'm a woman.
Thank you. There you go. And I think it's proven
it kills
right
me.
Here. Go ahead.
Well, I mean, I just started to say it reminds me of, I mean, the Republicans during the civil rights and everything had more, was actually there instead of just blowing hot air. And it's almost the same thing now. How many Democrats have been in trouble for sexual assault, you know, lasciviousness, et cetera, you know, versus
sure.
Republicans, but yet they're the first one to preach, oh, yeah, this and that, and, you know, they talk out of the side of their mouth, but yet they're the ones doing it. I mean, that's what it reminds me of. So here you have Alison Lundergan Grimes saying, oh, yeah, I believe in women's rights. Well, the other people in her party are the ones that, you know, are carrying out the actions.
Well, and I agree with you there. And, you know, I think it's a systemic problem. I'm sure there's Republicans that do that, but let's face facts here, folks. You know, we're seeing more and more that the Democrats are the ones who are typically being caught in this kind of crap, taking the cash payoffs, accused of sexually harassing. We know Republicans have in the past. Bob Packwood is a great example. But I tell you, here's the rest of the story. Because Alison Lundergan Grimes refused to go on record talking about whether Arnold should resign from office just last year. She refused to really take a stance on any part of this, but she did take a campaign contribution from Arnold once he was out of office. Now, you want to go mm-hmm. even further than that. There was one vote, one lone vote against punishing Arnold, and it was cast by Marion County lawyer Elmer George. And, oh, by the way, Elmer George gave the maximum contribution to Grimes' Senate campaign, and George's son is on the Grimes campaign payroll as well. So you think all this isn't money motivated? When you talk about honor and ethics, here you go.
I'm telling you, they have got
it's
their
crazy.
Tentacles wrapped around every aspect, don't they?
Yeah. I mean, that's exactly it. So Grimes is taking money from these skanks and sitting here saying, you know, not willing to take a stance on it. Now, you can like, not like, whatever you want to do with Mitch McConnell, but when it comes to women's rights, I think at this juncture in the race, you know, bar none, McConnell actually has a right to take the high road here. I've never seen such a thing, a woman running for office, claiming to represent women and standing up for women's rights, takes money from a guy, a known sexual harasser. That's based on three people's testimony. He's a sexual harasser, so he doesn't care about women at all. Just a dirty old man, and she don't mind taking his money and not making any statements about it, as long as she gets what she wants from it. And, oh, by the way, one of his biggest supporters maxed a contribution to her, and his son works on her campaign. This is ridiculous.
Yeah.
This is ridiculous.
Well, I mean, the thing that kills me is we spoke about it sometimes with regard to a lot of politicians. To me, it just seems like amateur hour. I mean, surely I would look at it, you know, not in politics currently, but I would have to look at it and say, hey, look, this is where Allison's people got to call up Arnold's people and some other people and say, look, you know, don't take it too personally. You know, this is it's packaging, it's marketing. But I am going to tear you a new one in public, okay? You know, we can be friends. Don't take it personally. It's business. And I would go out there and she should be able, you know, should have positioned herself to shred him. Hey, I didn't go over the line, did I? I mean, that's kind of what you expected. You know, wink, wink, nod, nod. It's all politics, you know. I had to take that position. You understand, right? You know, whether she meant it or not. But she should be doing it, and it just amazes me that she can't, that her people and the Democratic, the Kentucky Democrat Party, can't see that that's kind of what they need to do, but they won't do it.
Well, and that's the whole thing, and this is really it. I mean, when it comes to the ethics panel that was involved here, you know, the ethics members, it's a 9-member panel is what it is, but only 5 members showed up that day. So 4 were told not to show up. The vote to get rid of John Arnold and hold him accountable was 4-1, but their bylaws, the panel's bylaws, stipulate that any motion to convict a legislator of an ethics violation requires 5 votes. So 4 members didn't show up for the hearing, and I'm sure that was intentional. The other 5 showed up. 4 were allowed to save face, and George, Elmer George, was the lone vote against convicting him. So they only had 4 votes instead of the requisite 5, and there was only 5 out of 9 there. This thing was set up from the very beginning, and when you talk about how smart or dumb campaigns are, this got to be the dumbest thing Alison Lundgren Grimes ever did. She didn't need to make a phone call to John Arnold. You just make a statement. You know, I don't believe that sexual harassment should exist in any workplace. If John Arnold is found guilty, I hope that he suffers the consequences of the law as I would expect from anyone, period. That's not raking him over the coals. It's a good statement to make, and it's a generic statement to make that shows that you're siding. But by doing it this way, she probably cost herself more campaign money. I do know this much, though. We are fast out of time. Mayo, thank you so much for the call tonight. We appreciate it. Ed, I tell you, we've got to get into final thoughts, man. Go ahead.
Oh, man, final thoughts. I guess we'll get on to the drone thing, just shooting from the hip here. And like I said, I get the rights part. Believe me, I've moved from political parties from one, you know, because of rights violations. But also, I look at government in the fiduciary. I don't want to hark on Downard, but like I could say, our city doesn't have any more money than anybody else's city. And with regard to that, I wish not only would they look at the constitutional aspects of it, but look at the fiduciary aspects. And I'm glad that Chief Conrad is standing up and essentially saying the same thing. Hey, let's let somebody else sort this out. You know, drones, if they're found to be useful and legal under certain circumstances and, you know, with certain parameters, great. We can use them. They're incredibly cost-effective and efficient little buzz bombs flying around. But not until we establish the legal, all the legal parameters. And as I was saying earlier, if you can get somebody else to foot the bill for it, even if it's only going to be a couple hundred grand, I don't want to see our city putting drones up in the air and then having the ACLU come in and slap the snot out of them and drive up court costs and, you know, get a couple people like our Connie lady who thinks they're microwaving her all the time, you know, claiming stuff and seeking damages for violation of rights. I mean, I don't want to see our city exposed to that. And to me, I just can't understand why our city council doesn't see that right now. I hope they do. I hope Chief Conrad can sit down and talk some sense into them. But it's like, guys, you know, aside from all the constitutional things, let's think this through on a financial level, too.
Well, I tell you, you know, I'm not even concerned with the financial level. I am sick and tired. I mean, these things are a few hundred bucks. That's what they cost today. So for less than $1,000, you know, you could buy a drone. For $5,000, you can get 8 of them. I mean, seriously, that's not a big bunch of money. Our politicians spend more out of their discretionary funds buying votes in their districts every year than they ever would spending the money on the drones. That money is there. The problem I've got is the use of it. I am sick and tired of this government and these elected leaders thinking that they have the rights to violate my reasonable rights of privacy. To think that they want to be able to use these things, I tell you what we need to do. Since we do news, and I believe that I should go out and go ahead and purchase a drone. If you guys want to make a contribution to make that happen, let me know at myviewmatters@AOL.com. But I say we go out and purchase our own drone, and we go ahead and fly it on every expressway in Louisville that all these cops speed on just for fun. And we go ahead and hold them accountable to speeding laws. Let's take it to all of these daggone parking lots where we find police sitting behind buildings, hiding, pulled up next to each other, shooting shit for 2 or 3 hours instead of out patrolling and taking care of crime. Let's go ahead and do that. Let's follow the politicians around so when they show up at the boat over in Indiana and use taxpayer funds to gamble, yes, we know at least one has, okay? Let's go ahead and get that. I mean, if you really want to go down the drone road and you want to get into people's expectations of privacy and you want all of these different things, if I have to expect that from you because you demand accountability from me for what I do in the privacy of my own property, my own land, and my own home, then I certainly should have the right to demand the same of you when you're using my taxpayer money to do it. That's the situation on drones for me. So don't bring it into my house, or I may just be tempted to go ahead and retaliate and bring it to yours. And to me, that's a fair assessment of the situation. That's as far as I can go. That's it for tonight. Tomorrow night we'll be here again, 7 o'clock, same time, same channel with Mr. Martin as always. And until then, folks, have a great night. We will talk to you later. Have a good one, Mr. Martin.
All right. Have a good one, Mr. Springsteen.
Take care, folks.